This is Dr. Stephen Nurse, and this is my third and final series on the war in Vietnam, titled, A Letter is a Living Voice. We will be reading letters and documented accounts written by Vietnam veterans. These letters show all the emotion of war, from fear to anger to love and fellowship. These are only the opinions of the writers of the documents and not those of the voice of Vashon or the readers. In addition, while some of the language in the documents may appear to be racially insensitive, it is the actual language of war. It is my opinion that to use the exact language to give the listener a true understanding of the veterans' ratings and their associated emotions is extremely important. In war, we demonize our enemy through our language and our pictures. We make them inanimate, therefore easier to kill.
Wait a minute, wait a minute. Wait a minute, please make the postman wait. Wait a minute, wait a minute.
Hello, this is Steve Nurse, and this is our third series on Vietnam. And as usual, any project that I get involved in tends to morph into lots of things. One of the things that happened when we started talking about the letters was that for many people in reading the letters and hearing some of these letters was the whole process of healing. So we are also doing some interviews with folks, veterans, and folks that have been involved in having veterans return to Vietnam and looking at that that healing process that takes place when they revisit. And today we have with us Mike Dorsey. Mike is a friend of mine from high school. Don't think I can count that high. We kind of start telling you like 47 years ago when I was in high school, you know. But Mike is a vet, and he also has been back to Vietnam to visit. And we'll let him talk about that a little bit more. But he didn't necessarily go back to the places where he was in the where he served in the parts of the country that he served in, but certainly went back and saw the infrastructure and how that worked. So, Mike, thanks for being here today, and hopefully we'll have you read some letters here soon in the next series. Okay. Mike, you served in, what, 68, 69? Was that when you were in country, in the military?
69 to January 70.
Okay. And so when was the first time you went back to Vietnam after that?
Let's see, what is it, 23? I was there in 2021.
Okay. All right. So then, and this is when you went back, you had a friend back there, is that correct?
Yeah, I have a friend that lives in Thailand. So, you know, I think I got that date wrong, Steve. Actually, I was there in, I think, 2019.
Okay.
But I was there prior to COVID, and I had the opportunity to go to Burma, Laos, Cambodia, and Thailand, Vietnam. And so I was in Vietnam for about a week during that time.
Okay. Is there anything that particularly struck you about the country, the people? Were the people did they feel like they had any animosity towards you?
Well, you know, that's interesting. In thinking of this program and going back and the kind of some of the issues you had raised, I realized that I just didn't have a real desire to go back there. I'm obviously really interested in the cultures of Southeast Asia. It's quite remarkable, lovely place, really amazing. But I think for all pretty obvious reasons, I didn't really want to go back to where I was in Vietnam. So we chose to visit the big cities. We went to Hanoi and then went to Ho Chi Minh City, Saigon.
Right.
And kind of skipped the opportunity to be out in the bush and see all of that again. If I were to go again, I probably would revisit the places I was stationed. But at that time, I was not.
And where were you stationed?
I was stationed at a place called Cu Chi, which is essentially just west of Saigon, right out by the famous Parrot Beak and the border to Cambodia over there. Matter of fact, my unit was, after I got home and when Nixon put on the big surge to push everybody back so we could withdraw, my unit was one of the lead units in the Cambodian excursion, I guess we'll call it.
Cambodian excursion, yes. Sir.
So we were right out there close to the border.
We have nice names for those kinds of things, don't we? Conflicts, you know. I had conflicts in fifth grade, but they certainly weren't that serious.
Mm-hmm.
So, and isn't Cu Chi where all the tunnels are? Isn't that one of the main areas?
Yeah, it turns out there's an extensive tunnel complex in the whole Cu Chi area, I'm told.
Yeah, and I guess I could just literally hold thousands of people underground and had medical facilities, you know. And
theaters, hospitals, dining halls, right, all that stuff.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. Did you talk to the people when you were there? I mean, obviously you did. I mean,
I did, and they were marvelous. They were very friendly, which I still don't understand exactly, but somehow we came out looking okay to the Vietnamese people that I met, at any rate. The people in the north were just as pleasant and helpful and happy as the people in the south. Well, the people in Hanoi versus the people in Saigon.
I
hardly made an exhaustive visit. But no, I was really surprised, too. Somehow we seem to have come out to be well-motivated, but perhaps mistaken or something. But no, I didn't see any hostility at all.
You know, and I've also heard the statement that, you know, for so many Vietnamese during that time, that, you know, they were in war with France for so long that a state of war was almost kind of the way you lived, almost like in Ireland for years and years between the Protestants and the Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there was another bombing, a big deal. I mean, that was kind of just the way of life. When you were in the service, did you at least go through Saigon, or did you do R&R in Saigon, or did you ever get there at all?
No, I never saw the place.
Really?
I was there. I hear nice stories about it, but
And how did you feel like the infrastructure of the place was? Did they seem to be organized? Were roads
Oh, God, yeah. It seemed very first world to me. I was surprised at the size of both of those cities. They're very large. I'm going to get the numbers wrong now, but I want to say 5 to 7 million people. So it's 5 to 7 times Seattle.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Large buildings, not skyscrapers, but very tall buildings, all over the place, roads, electronics, all of your computer equipment works perfectly. All of your telephone, you know, Wi-Fi, everything is wired up very ship shape. I was impressed. It was very good. They've clearly made a lot of progress.
And I've also heard that that from talking to some folks Dave Watson, who actually still lives in Saigon or in Ho Chi Minh City, he was saying that, you know, in some respects, the war was positive for Vietnam in the fact that it brought in lots of technology. It brought in people were able to glean from the Americans a lot of the production and how to do things and how to build things. And also, when people see those things, they want those things when they see those electronics. And so maybe from that standpoint, there was some positive. I do understand that there is, and I know one of the things that we're going to talk about with later with Sue Warner Bean is that there's still one of the problems there is, of course, there's still lots of unexploded ordnance that is still killing people, and that Agent Orange is still an issue in birth defects, even 4 and 5 generations down the line there.
Wow.
Were you able to move around freely? I mean, pretty much, or were you, was anybody looking at you?
Oh, not at all. No, we were not. No, not at all. We were totally free to wander wherever we wanted to go.
Uh-huh.
No problems at all.
And did you have a car? Did you? I know you mentioned you had scooters or something one time.
If you're brave enough to ride a scooter in either one of those cities, you're a brave man. But we were able to taxi, you know, anything we wanted to do. No mind. It's not like North Korea at all. It's just pretty freewheeling, actually.
Yeah.
It seemed to me. I talked to a fellow, a Vietnamese national, actually, just the other day. And we were, he must be 55 or so. So he was kind of had just graduated from high school about the time of the war and, you know, was there for the aftermath and all that kind of thing. Somehow he's a citizen here now. It goes back and forth. But he's saying that the people, the current generation in Vietnam is much better off and doing really well, in his opinion, more than they would have been a few years ago. He says they've complete. You know, the new generation has forgotten the war. I mean, they weren't. Nobody was
right.
Alive. That was same here. But he seemed to be pretty positive on everything there, which I take as a interesting kind of sign.
Yeah, I mean,
the economy is happening. I mean, they're really booming over there, it seemed to me.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And you were mentioning, you know, you've been involved yourself in adult living facilities, that they have, that's quite a bit less expensive to live there and those kinds of things.
Oh, yeah. By our standards, it's really inexpensive. If you go there as a lower middle class person here, whatever that is.
Yeah.
When you get there, you're instantly upper middle, you know,
right.
Just by virtue of the money exchange, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, definitely fighting the trend here. It's definitely a big boost. You can live very well over there. Very well.
And interesting about the scooters, too, because they're relatively inexpensive method of transportation. Mm-hmm. And yet I see when I was in Costa Rica, they were all over the place. And we were on this big tour bus, and yet there are scooters just, you know, in between the lanes and just going crazy. And I noticed even in Seattle now, you know, when you go in downtown Seattle, all those lime things, I almost, I, almost hit somebody. You know, I was coming up Fauntleroy, and somebody shot across without, you know, against the light on one of those scooters. And so politically, do you notice that there is the socialism there? Do they seem to have good medical? Do they seem to have, you know?
You know, that's the kind of thing I sadly can't comment on. I really didn't get any sense for that. But I would really like to know the answer to those questions myself. I know they've been focusing clearly on the economy, and that's doing well. They produce all kinds of our clothing and all sorts of things like that. But I've always wondered about that, how the medical system is and all of that. I don't know.
Yeah, and you would also wonder, you know, that in a lot of respects, because United States is such a consumer of goods and products, you would almost have to have, I mean, if you want to build your economy, you've got to have a good relationship with the United States, I would think, in many cases, to sell those products. I know that, and also, as you build your economy, you're going to start importing things. So that kind of a trade relationship has got to be pretty critical. My understanding is that the medical and the dental and those kinds of things are fairly positive. Again, you know, so many of the Vietnamese have been trained in, you know, medically and those ways in the United States, and again through that relationship. If they get the training, if whatever it is, if it's in finance or medical or whatever, you still have a positive relationship. And I think also what you're saying is really true, is that we do tend to forget some things. I mean, we, you know, when you and I and Rick were young or younger, you know, we saw Vietnam on the news every night. Walter Cronkite usually had a list up there of the number of Vietnamese killed and the number of U.S. soldiers killed. We also, I remember also seeing when they used to have newsreels in the movie theaters. I so clearly remember seeing that domino theory, that they would have a picture of the map of Southeast Asia,
right,
and kind of have a picture of China, and the little dominoes would fall, and that was the reason that that we were there, also for the products.
Right on.
You know, and yes, and so what would be your, in explaining, you know, your trip there, how about the sanitation? Were things clean? Were things not cluttered?
You know, that's an interesting question. I would say sanitation-wise and cleanliness-wise, it was good. It was very, very good. Not, you know, immaculate, like some places are, but very good, especially considering the population density. There,
right.
Holy cow! There's a lot of people per square cubit.
And I also, one of the things that David said was, you know, for a long time, Vietnam was pretty isolated with the COVID thing, and they really kind of shut down. And then COVID got in there, and he was saying that the national government just really kind of mobilized. People stayed in their own apartments. They stayed in their own little places. But the government would come by and drop food off. and drop water or whatever they need, you know, whatever supplies they needed, and still had that kind of a system. Did you see, were there people you saw with disabilities there from the war, or is that was probably they probably died a long time ago, I suppose.
That could be, or they weren't hanging out where I was.
Right.
You know, we kind of dropped in the middle of the city, you know, so we really had a city tour and didn't get out and whatever that gave us, but we didn't get out into the countryside.
Is there a visual presence of Ho Chi Minh, you know, pictures like we see in a lot of other countries where that are?
No, not so much. Uh-huh. Again, a limited visit, but not so much. I mean, in Thailand, for instance, pictures of the king are quite prominently displayed. You will see them. Not so much in Laos, Cambodia, Burma. Yeah, I didn't see much of that. You do see the little communist, you know, the little red hammer and sickle flag, which is kind of weird. But otherwise, no, it's just very capitalistic, actually. The market is humming, you know. People are buying and selling and moving a lot.
Wow, yeah, yeah. Are there still lots of open markets there and for the people? But yet is there a financial area in town? Do you know if there's a...
I'm sure there is.
Yeah. I think there's a Vietnamese stock market.
Yeah.
You know.
That I would believe. Yeah, they, you know, they're not just sitting around. It is not what we used to think of as a third world country. Like I say, you know, the buildings... The infrastructure I saw in terms of electricity and internet access, all your new pads and phones working, people moving around easily, rapid transit or scooters by the thousand.
Yeah.
It's happening. It's very vibrant. Very active. Surprisingly, I had kind of envisioned a more third worldy kind of scenario.
Yeah, but kind of open markets and yeah.
But I was way off. Now I'm sure those markets exist somewhere around this.
Sure.
You know, but we didn't get to them in our our drunken stumbling haze through the.
yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see where they are in even 10 years from now. Because I think that, you know, so many of the communist countries, like China also realizes, you know, China has been isolated for so many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And yet now they realize with cell phones, you can't isolate yourself anymore. You know, if something happens, the whole world knows it in an instant.
Yeah.
If you're going to thrive economically, you have to do that through working with other countries. Other countries have products you need. When COVID struck, the oil market was the first thing that went very crazy because some of your big oil consumers. China, for instance, was really closed down and was not using that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they'll have all electric scooters and Tesla scooters at that point. With I can just see all those scooter stations.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, that would be a big improvement for them because scooters actually stink up the place. I mean, they put out... the exhaust on a scooter, because of the fact that it's such a simple engine,
right.
It doesn't reconsume the exhaust like a car does, and to put it through a catalytic converter and so forth, it just kind of comes straight out. And they tend to be, the pollution from scooters, it tends to be kind of odoriferous and nasty. So electric scooters would be a big improvement.
Probably not a big market for stolen catalytic converters off of Honda 90s. So that would be...
Yeah, no, not yet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, are you, would you like, to, you said you would like to go back to, would you like to go back again and to look at the country from a different perspective? Or are there things that you think about going back that are, do you have negative thoughts, positive thoughts, combination of both?
You know, not being a therapist, but thinking that there's actually a little bit of, psychological complexity to this. It's an area where experiences were generally negative for the most part. So the idea of going back there in itself is obviously meets with a certain amount of mental resistance. You know, no, I don't think I'll go there. On the other hand, I think there's a lot to be gained from going to a place like where you had a negative experience and re-seeing it with new mature eyes and perhaps adjusting yourself in a more positive way.
By saying you saw it in a negative, you saw some things in a negative experience, would that mean because you saw death, that you saw destruction, those kinds of things?
Yeah, when you're there in the military, there's just a lot of bad stuff going on. So... And generally speaking, even though there are some, you know, good brotherly experiences there, but generally speaking, it's not a place you want to go see again. Mm-hmm. You know, you just kind of, when you're gone, you're like to be gone.
It's not like the fun place to go to.
Not a fun place, but it could be a healing experience, though, certainly to go back and with our mature eyes, take a look at what we experienced.
And I think that's... That's a really important thing to say. You talk about mature eyes. I think of all the veterans that I've interviewed, when they went to Vietnam, they saw Vietnam first through very immature eyes, mm-hmm. not knowing what to expect, thinking they were there for one reason and finding out they were there for another reason, thinking that they were going there to be in the action all the time and, playing real life war. And yet, when you talk to a lot of people, one of the hardest things that they had to deal with was boredom, was being in a landing zone and not knowing, and also the apprehension of not knowing when you were going to go someplace or not. Were you going to be, you must have had a pretty regular schedule when you were there. Did you have a regular schedule when you were there?
Yeah, we
with what you did,
go out every day.
Regular. So I really appreciate you sharing this with us, and it'll be interesting to when we talk later to Sue Warner Bean about taking soldiers back, mm-hmm. because also those soldiers wanted to go back, those veterans wanted to go back for a reason. So I think that's going to be an interesting perspective.
I think so, too.
And thank you very much for visiting with us today and being here in Voice of Vashon studio here in beautiful downtown Vashon.
You know, it is pretty gorgeous here. Thanks for having me, Steve.
And I've had all the pictures taken down of me and that are in the town and everything, so we're at a different time now. Thank you very much, Vashon. We will talk to you later.
Listening to Is Abled with Dr. Stephen Nurse. This has been part three of his series on the war in Vietnam entitled A Letter is a Living Voice. To hear additional episodes, including his previous series on the Vietnam War, go to voiceofashon.org and look for Is Abled under the Shows tab.